seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. We took a long weekend. Now we're back ready to talk both local and national sports, and there's so much to get into, so much to talk about on both ends. It's a big week on the local front. We have a couple of big baseball games tomorrow and Friday. In fact, it's a Region 12 championship. That's what it is, between Carbon and Emory. Right now, Carbon 6-0 after sweeping Richfield. Emory one game back of Carbon after splitting with South Sevier, but picking up a walk-off victory on Friday afternoon, courtesy of Jax Madsen. You can get your write-ups on both of those games right now at CastleCountryRadio.com, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later on in the show. But Coach Centenaris will join us over the phone. That's coming up next segment. And then later, I want to talk about the NBA and the Utah Jazz. Now, Utah tonight taking on the Lakers. The Jazz a game and a half better than the Phoenix Suns for the number one spot in the Western Conference as we speak. Suffered a loss on Saturday in a game in which nobody played on either sides between the Lakers and the Jazz. But the big news came out Friday that the Jazz have a new minority owner. That's Dwayne Wade. He's bought minority stock in the team. And in my mind, this is a big deal. And I know that Jazz fans were extremely excited over the weekend, as they should be. We could see Dwayne Wade at center court holding up a Utah Jazz jersey. It sparks enthusiasm to a franchise that is oozing with potential as we speak. Number one team in the NBA. And the cushion that the Jazz created now definitely comes into play with Donovan Mitchell having to miss, maybe 2 weeks? I think he's going to be reevaluated today, tomorrow. We'll find out. He's going to miss at least a week. But it's an exciting time to be a Jazz fan. What does this mean for the franchise? I will tell you right now that Ryan Smith has done wonders for this organization already. I mean, I think the Miller family did a terrific job, and we'll get into this a little bit later. It wasn't their passion. It wasn't Gail Miller's passion. Right? It wasn't her kid's passion the way it was for Larry. They kept the franchise afloat. They did some good things. But now a fan owns the team once again, and you know for a fact that this guy is going to do absolutely everything he can to put them in a position to succeed, and this just creates a little extra buzz. We'll talk about players owning minority stakes in teams. Plus, we'll look around the NBA. We'll talk about the Jazz and the injury to Donovan Mitchell. How comparable is it to the Denver Nuggets? Jamal Murray's out for the year. We know he's not coming back. Donovan, at least, will be back in uniform a little bit later on this year. So that's coming up here on Drive Time Sports. Let's look at the national sports headlines, and we will begin in the NFL. Alex Smith has announced his retirement from football a year after staging one of the biggest comebacks in the sport's history. And I know this hits a little harder in the state of Utah because we got to watch Alex Smith over his, I'm going to call it a great 16-year career in the NFL. We got to see him quarterback and usher in a new era of Utah Ute football. You know, where the Utes are at today, competing inside the top five, competing in the Pac-12, that was groundwork laid by Urban Meyer and Alex Smith. It was. That was a turning point for that program. And then Alex Smith became the number one overall pick, and he had his ups, he had his downs in San Francisco, and he handled everything that was thrown at him in that situation with class and dignity. Then he goes to Kansas City, and it's the same concept. Patrick Mahomes comes in, Alex Smith on his way out. Again, he handles it with nothing but class. Then he suffers one of the most brutal injuries a quarterback could suffer on the football field. A compound leg fracture 17 surgeries to stem an infection in the right leg, which was nearly amputated. And then we got to see the Project 11 documentary, which was just mind-boggling. Put everything in perspective. But then Alex Smith comes back, plays for the Washington football team. We see him on the field. And in my mind, it was one of the greatest scenes of the 2020-21 campaign. The Comeback Player of the Year Award should be named the Alex Smith Comeback Player of the Year Award. You know, there are times in professional sports where the inspiration goes to a level that I don't think we ever could have predicted. Right? Like the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. I love the fact that we get Jared Payton on the show once every year, every 2 years. He's always kind enough to join us on the show. We talk about the contributions that his dad made on and off the field. That's a fitting award. Recently, the NBA, they changed the All-Star MVP to the Kobe Bryant All-Star MVP Award. And those are just a couple off at the top of my head that I'm going to mention. The Comeback Player of the Year Award. I don't believe we'll ever see a comeback or a player step into a situation that better fits the definition of that award. Because it was absolutely incredible what Alex Smith was able to do. Fight his way back onto a 53-man roster, inactive for the first four games of the season, but then week five he gets to play because Kyle Allen was injured. And I don't even care what that day looked like for Alex Smith. It wasn't good. He was sacked six times. And he was hit on his first series by Aaron Donald, one of the greatest football players in the world. And I remember watching this game live thinking, oh no. But then right then and there, it showed us that Alex's leg could handle it. He's back. Alex Smith is back. Started six games. Washington goes 5-1 of those contests. They go 7-9. They get to the playoffs. They lose to the Buccaneers. Unfortunately, a bone bruise forced him to miss three of the last four games, including the playoffs. But my goodness, if you couldn't be inspired by what Alex Smith accomplished professionally, especially after watching Project 11, I don't know what to tell you. You may not have a pulse. Tip your hat to Alex Smith. Job well done. Name the Comeback Player of the Year Award after this guy. He's a phenomenal inspiration. Let's take a look at the scoreboard in Major League Baseball. We had one game earlier today. The Boston Red Sox get the best of the Chicago White Sox. Boston got off to a shaky start. They were the butt of many jokes on social media. And now all of a sudden the Red Sox are 11-6. They've gone 11-3 since starting 0-3. And the jokes were flying. They were flying on social media. But the Red Sox pick up a win right now. They lead the AL East. And the Yankees, for the very first time since 1968, are in dead last in the American League. That's a phenomenal stat, isn't it? Full slate of baseball games coming up. 5:05, we get the Giants and the Phillies. Nightcap baseball tonight. It's the Padres and the Brewers. We'll take a look at the schedule in the NBA. As I mentioned tonight, the Utah Jazz take on the Los Angeles Lakers. 8 o'clock start time in that contest. David Lockeron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call at 7:50. Other games, 5 o'clock, Cleveland at Detroit. Now we get Chicago at Boston and Golden State at Philadelphia. 6 o'clock hour, San Antonio will travel to meet Indiana. We get Miami hosting Houston. Oklahoma City at Washington. Not the best slate of games other than that Golden State-Philadelphia contest. I love that matchup. Phoenix at Milwaukee tonight should be a fun one at 6 p.m. We get the Grizzlies and the Nuggets, and then the Lakers and the Jazz will be the nightcap. We're going to break for just a moment. Coming up, a local sports recap. We'll be joined by Coach Jeff Cincineros. We'll talk Utah Jazz basketball and Dwayne Wade. Plus, we'll give you the recap of what went down yesterday in NASCAR. If you missed the race, a one-minute recap is straight ahead. That's all right here on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things. Play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
Got a big set of baseball games coming up on the diamond this week. Carbon and Emory. And essentially, it's for the Region 12 championship. Carbon right now with the top of the Region 12 standings at 6-0. Emory right behind at 5-1 after splitting with South Sevier. These two teams will play Tuesday. They'll play again Friday. So two games this week, basically, to decide the Region 12 championship. We're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest. Joining us over the phone, we have Carbon High School baseball manager Jeff Cincineros. And, Coach, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate you getting us on this week.
Yeah, always, Coach. Look forward to it. And I know it was a big week for your baseball program. Getting down to it, the final six or so games in region play, we had a three-way tie at the top of the standings. Carbon, Emory, Richfield, all a perfect 4-0. You guys had a very pivotal series with Richfield. It maybe had some struggles in that last game, but still, you come out with two victories, and now you're in the driver's seat for a region championship, sitting at a perfect 6-0, especially following Emory's loss to South Sevier. You guys are in the driver's seat.
Yeah, it's getting down to the end of the region, like you talked about, and you know, we had three teams right there together last week, and Richfield now with two losses and Emory with one, and us sitting still with zero in the loss column. But you know, these last couple weeks are going to be very important for everybody in our region to try and keep getting themselves a higher seeding when it comes to the RPI and everything like that. So, you know, we're just excited to be in the position we're in and to try and keep moving forward and do the best we can.
Well, Coach, let's start by talking about the first matchup with Richfield. You guys go out, you handle your business, you walk away with a pretty hefty win. I know that regardless of the state of Richfield, no matter what the program looks like, it's always a competitive team. It doesn't matter which sport it is. We've seen that in basketball over the last few years, and so it's not an easy matchup with this team. A 10-1 win at home. You guys take care of business and, well, again, pick up a 9-run win and hold them to two hits.
Yeah, Richfield's always scrappy. I mean, they're the returning 3A state champs when you go back to 2 years ago, since we didn't have a state title last year. And you know, they always come to play hard, and you know, I thought we did a good job jumping on them at home. Very easily could have had two or three more runs on the board that we left at third base. You know, we hit the ball extremely well Tuesday at home. We had a lot of hard lineouts to the Richfield guys that, like I said, if you hit them 5 or 6 feet one more way or the other, we score a few more runs. But I was really happy with, you know, our pitching performance that day, and our hitting. I mean, we put it all together and beat a very good team, and you know, and was excited about our effort that day, and then went to Richfield on Friday and battled a extremely poor weather day all together. I mean, we had every season, of course, that you get in Utah: snow, rain, wind, hail, and just kind of battled through that. We walked way too many guys. I think we ended up with 14 walks at the end of the day, and now all of Richfield's runs were unearned, and we get out with a 15-10 win, which we hit the ball extremely well on Friday as well, but just had too many walks to the pitching staff. And I know conditions were a little bit rough the last two or three innings of that game, but again, it's something that we need to continue to work on and get better at.
Yeah, 22 hits over the course of two games, definitely enough offensive production for you guys to pick up wins. But, Coach, even though there were some negatives in that one against Richfield, I look at it as a positive. You guys find a way to win despite a lot of variables, be it the weather, be it on the road, walking a lot of hitters, whatever it is, you guys still found a way to get a win. Throughout the course of a season, is that important to you that your team is faced with different situations and they find ways to come out on top, or is it just, no, we got the win?
No, it's always important to learn something about your team and for your team to learn something about themselves. And, you know, those are learning moments when you're not playing well. We've talked about it before. You know, now if you have those many walks and play poor defense and don't hit the ball, it's a game you're going to lose. But, you know, we knew our pitchers were struggling a little bit, and we focused up on the offensive side of things and did enough to score enough runs to overcome that. And, you know, those are things that you try and teach your team that you worked on all season. You can't have every variable go against you every day. You got to find a way to make a positive out of something. And, you know, if our pitching is good and our hitting has not been good, we've had those games. I mean, we had 2-1-0 losses 2 weeks ago, to where we had stellar pitching performance and just couldn't get runs across the board. And, you know, the only reason we were in those games is because of our pitching and our defense. And, again, you know, you can't have everything go south on you at the same time. And it's something we try and focus on, that, you know, if one thing's not working well, that we try and at least make sure we're doing something on the other end, whether it's offense or defense, to keep us in a ball game and give ourselves a chance to win. So, you know, extremely important lessons that we're learning about ourselves and what we're capable of doing. And, you know, when we do put it all together, we're a very good baseball team, and we've done that a few times. And, you know, I know we're going to continue to do that as the season moves forward. And we're getting here late into the year. I mean, we're only a couple weeks away from, you know, state playoffs and things like that. So it's an exciting time for our group. And a time where we just need to keep working hard and keep learning who we are.
Yeah, let's jump ahead, Coach, to what you guys have this week. Two games against Emory, and for the most part, it's region championship baseball. That's really what it boils down to. A game tomorrow, and then you'll meet up again with them later on in the week. And without really, I mean, I guess using hyperbole, when you look at it realistically, you win these two games, you will be region champs. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, we finish up at Moab, but, you know, we win these two games. We're, at the very least, a +3 in the loss column. So even if, you know, we had slipped up, you know, against Moab and lost a couple of games, there's no one that could catch us in that aspect. But, you know, we kind of don't look at it that way. I mean, honestly, with the new RPI changes and everything, I mean, right now we're in the number 4 spot, and, you know, the top 4 seed in the RPI will host that first-round playoff series at home, and that's where we want to stay, is in the top 4. It's going to be pretty hard for us to move up a lot based on the teams ahead of us and the quality of teams in their region that they'll continue to play as well. But, you know, we can't afford to slip up, you know, this week or next week, because that's just gonna hurt our RPI and things like that. So, you know, region championships are great. And, you know, that was one of our goals at the beginning of the year, and it's still a goal now, and it's a goal that's intact. And, you know, we're going to be proud of that if that's something we do accomplish. But I think the bigger thing right now is, you know, is that RPI thing and sticking in the top 4, because you could have a team win a region title and not be in the top 4 in the RPI and not host the playoff game now, you know, with the new rules. So, you know, region championships are still important. Don't take that wrong. But right now our RPI situation is kind of where we're really focused on, and just taking care of business every game that we have left in the season.
Again, our guest right now, manager Jeff Cinceneros of the Carbondano baseball team. Coach, let's talk individually here for a moment. In years past, you and I have had conversations about having to hit the ball. Pitching's been fantastic, but it's been, can we score enough runs? When I take a look at what you guys have been able to put together offensively so far this year, you have several kids hitting above 300. Some are hovering around even 400. Some are hovering around 350. I mean, we could list names. Rylan Hart's been phenomenal at the plate. Keaton Rich, Wyatt Falk, I know, was big for you guys in the game against Richfield. We can go on and on and on. This seems to be the most consistent I have seen your program hit the ball over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we sit down every game to put a lineup together, and, you know, and it's been tough. And we're basing our lineup really strictly right now on our offensive output, and then we're just moving guys defensively where we can put them. And so we do have some guys playing out of position defensively, but, you know, we have really 12 guys right now who at any given time could be in our lineup. And we have guys at the JV level who haven't even gotten an opportunity in a varsity game yet to really swing the bat that are doing great things at the JV level. So it's really competitive, and, you know, it's nice to have those guys swinging the bat. And, you know, if somebody's not really looking that great in their first couple of bats, you know, we can always make a change and give someone an opportunity to go in and swing for them. And, you know, that's a positive thing as well. But, you know, Jacob Vasquez has continued to hit baseball well. He continued this week to do a good job for us. I believe he's still leading us in batting average. You know, Kate Dimmick hit another home run for us against Richfield, and had a few RBIs on Friday as well. But, yeah, you mentioned some other names. Those guys are just doing a great job for us. You know, Brayden Nelson came in Friday and picked up, I think, 3 or 4 RBIs for us, you know, after not swinging the bat for us on Tuesday and then got an opportunity again Friday. So these guys are, you know, they're making the most of their opportunities, and they're doing it in a team fashion. We've talked about, you know, when some guy swings it for you, not to get down on yourself or get down on anything, just continue to work hard. And that's something these guys are continuing to do. And, you know, as a coach, it makes you real proud that they're adapting, you know, their game to what's best for your team. And right now that's what these guys are doing. And it's a real positive for us.
A lot of the names that we just talked about, Coach, their success isn't just at the plate. It's translated into the field as well. And I know that there was a rough outing as far as control against Richfield from the pitcher's mound. But even at there, I mean, Kate Dimmick's been fantastic for you on the mound. You got a lot of kids. I know Vasquez has also had a couple of opportunities for you. It just seems like this team is deep almost in every aspect.
Yeah, we talked about it before. You know, I think we've got 20 or 21 guys on our varsity roster, and 19 of those guys can step in and pitch for us at any given time. And it's rough. I mean, when Cooper Shade, for instance, you know, last outing he threw a one-hitter for us down in St. George, and he hasn't seen the mound again, you know, in 3 weeks now. And, it's just so hard because we have so many great arms to throw that you're trying to get everybody an opportunity to get that time. And some of these guys, you know, haven't really had a lot of time on the mound, but have done an awesome job for us when they have been called upon. So, you know, it's obviously it's a luxury that, you know, you don't get all the time. And, you know, we kind of start prepping these guys when they're freshmen, and some of them, you know, never pitchers, and you start prepping them as freshmen knowing that you're going to need those arms, you know, later on, and if they're willing to make that change and adapt, then this is what you get out of it. And so it's, you know, it's not something you just presented with. It's something that you work and develop over time, and, you know, it puts us in a situation where at any time we can bring anyone in to throw, and it's a real luxury. And, you know, I wish we had, you know, two or three arms that would throw at 95, you know, it would make life a little bit easier, but these guys are doing such an awesome job with what they're doing, and even when we have a bad outing with some walks, you know, we can call upon somebody else to help us out, so it's been really a positive for our team.
Yeah, good problem to have, that's for sure. Coach, I always look forward to these conversations. Best of luck against Emory in the two games this week, and I know we'll catch up again soon.
I appreciate it, Jordan. Thank you.
Again, that's Coach Jeff Cinceros of the Carbon Dino baseball team. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll move over to the national side of things. We'll talk NBA. Tonight, the Jazz taking on the Lakers. Second meeting in 3 days between the two teams. The Lakers get the best of the Jazz on Saturday. It was like watching a JV game. Nobody played in that contest. The big news for the Jazz over the weekend, it was Dwayne Wade. He's now a minority owner for the franchise. What does this do for the perception of the franchise? I'm a big Ryan Smith fan. I think this is a great thing. We'll talk about that when we return. It's right here on Drive Time Sports.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
It's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. You know, we save a segment most Mondays to talk NBA basketball. And coming up tonight, the Utah Jazz will welcome back, we believe, Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley. They're going to be in uniform as they take on the Los Angeles Lakers. It's the second meeting in, 3 days between these two teams. They went toe-to-toe on Saturday at the Staples Center. Lakers get a win in a game that was basically a JV contest. No Anthony Davis, no LeBron James, no Rudy Gobert, no Donovan Mitchell, no Mike Conley. They'll play again tonight. The Jazz will look a little bit different for that contest. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the live play-by-play call beginning at 7:50. That's when coverage is going to begin tonight. We're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the regular season and the excitement brewing around the Utah Jazz as Dwayne Wade has now joined the ownership group. Joining us to do that, we have Jameson Welsh. You can follow him on Twitter, @TheJameson. Terrific basketball mind of basketballnews.com. Jameson, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
Yeah, definitely appreciate the time today. And we'll start by talking about the excitement. At the end of last week, Dwayne Wade purchased an ownership stake in the Utah Jazz, joining majority owner Ryan Smith. And I think Ryan Smith has been just fantastic for this organization. I know that there were people that were a little bit skeptic of Smith when the deal went through. But for me, it was a no-brainer because Larry H. Miller was a fan of this organization. He was a fan. He loved it. He actually bled Utah Jazz basketball. He would eat, sleep, and drink it. And I never got that vibe from anyone else in the Miller family. That's no disrespect to them. But it just wasn't the same once Larry passed away. When I look at Ryan Smith, this is a guy that's young, energetic, a fan, and he loves the franchise. And I think that's what small market owners need to be. Now we see Dwayne Wade joining, and I think that this is, maybe it is a PR move, but in the same instance, if you're a Jazz fan, you have to be thrilled with the way this organization, the direction this organization is moving at the moment.
I mean, yeah, I mean, they're definitely, you know, moving in a different direction, but I will give the Millers credit. I'm not sure, how long did the Millers own the team? Were they the original owners of the Utah Jazz?
No, Larry H. Miller purchased the team back in 1985, and Jameson, as you know, being in Vegas, there was a real chance that Utah was going to leave, or the Jazz were going to leave the state of Utah. They were playing some of their home games at the Thomas and Mack Center.
Yeah, they were actually losing money, and they were having some issues, so they kind of had to get some things figured out. But yeah, they were playing some games. I believe they played their opener back in 83 in that Thompson Mack Center. So that kind of tells you what took place. So from that point to now, it's been a total 180. You know, the Miller family came in, kind of saved the day, and then next thing you know, we have Ryan Smith coming in and putting up the money he did, and he got a really good deal for the team. But he's been very proactive. He's been very energetic. He's breathed a big, fresh air into this organization, because for the longest time, the Jazz were known as a team that's not going to go over the tax, that's not going to extend guys. You know, last time Gordon Hayward had an extension, they kind of like, you know, drug their feet with it. So there were some preconceived notions that went across the league, and you know, about the Utah Jazz. But Ryan Smith's been very proactive with it, and then bringing D. Wade into the picture is very good. It's a very good look for a lot of different reasons. The biggest reason, though, is this: is image is everything. Whether Dwayne Wade has 1%, 5%, 10%, 0.5%, it's the perception of what's going on. You have a player who probably would not have signed as a free agent for the Utah Jazz. Like, let's get that clear. But now you have ownership roles, you have them in decision-making meetings. You know, that's a good look for a team and a fan base that has had some issues towards the opposition in the past. So that's a very, very good look for everyone involved.
I agree. When you look at the Hall of Fame-level players that hold NBA ownership stakes, so Grant Hill with Atlanta, Shaq with the Kings, Michael Jordan, obviously the majority owner for the Charlotte Hornets. Magic owned like a 5% stake, if I'm not mistaken, in the Lakers recently. And so, I don't want to say it's a new wave, but typically we see players set the precedent, right? So I do believe from an optics standpoint, it looks so good that you will see majority owners seek out Hall of Fame level players moving forward that have interest in owning even a small percentage stake in the team. It just looks good. This is just the beginning. Again, it's a copycat world when we talk about professional sports, because at the end of the day, it is a business.
Absolutely. And I mean, certain franchises, I mean, like the Magic owned 5% of Lakers. And for what he did for that franchise, you could argue he's entitled to more based on what he did for that franchise. But it's just one of those things where we're going to see this more and more. But I will say this, Jordan, with the way these investments are going, you got players investing into a lot of these startup businesses and companies, and you got the crypto going on. Don't be surprised if someone like Kevin Durant buys the team soon. Like, when I mean soon, you know, after he retires and whatnot, because these investments are putting a little money in and getting a whole lot of money out. Whenever you can clear nine figures on a transaction, you're doing something right. If you do a few of those, next thing you know, you have some money to play with, and groups can be, you know, figured out very easily. And next thing you know, you'll hear a group headed by Kevin Durant or headed by LeBron James buying a team.
Yeah, one more note on Dwayne Wade joining the Utah Jazz ownership stake. Mickey Arison, owner of the Miami Heat, said that he was a little disappointed that Dwayne Wade did not reconsider a stake in the Heat after they had previous negotiations. And then Dwayne Wade described a different kind of energy around Ryan Smith. I think when you combine those two, that should put a smile on the face of Utah Jazz fans in the direction that this organization is going. Dwayne Wade, you could make the case he's the greatest Miami Heat player in the history of their franchise based on longevity and what he managed to accomplish in a Heat uniform. And he decides to buy a stake in the Utah Jazz rather than the Miami Heat, all because of the synergy, and I use air quotes synergy, of Ryan Smith. That's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, the relationship between the Heat and Dwayne Wade is very interesting. I mean, he definitely retired as a member of the Heat, but there was a time period where the relationship wasn't so great. You know, they didn't treat him like a guy that's going to have a statue outside the building. You know what I mean? Like, when a guy's going to have a statue, you're supposed to treat them correctly. So I understand where he's coming from, but also Ryan Smith's a younger guy. Ryan Smith and Dwayne Wade are close in age. They may be the same age, or right around the same age. So there's a lot more in common, and the beliefs are way different than it would be with the Arison family. The Arison family is a little bit different. They own, I believe it's Carnival Cruise Line. They have different stuff going on, but Dwayne Wade and Ryan Smith are in the same age group. They probably have a lot of the same types of thoughts and ideas in the conversations these years. So that's what it is.
Again, our guest right now, Jameson Welsh of BasketballNews.com, as we talk about storylines in the NBA, including Dwayne Wade now owning a piece of the Utah Jazz. Let's stick with the Jazz for a moment. We'll move away from the business side. We'll talk about what's happening on court this past Saturday. A loss to the Lakers at Staples Center. This Jazz team looked drastically different. I made the reference to a JV game. No Rudy Gobert, no Mike Conley, no Donovan Mitchell. We know that Donovan Mitchell is going to miss some time. In comparison to Jamal Murray in Denver, how big is this for Utah? Now, the big difference, I know, Jameson, is the Jazz are going to get Donovan Mitchell back. The Nuggets aren't going to get Jamal Murray. But I spent an entire show last week talking about the importance of Murray in Denver, and I completely write off the Nuggets come playoff time. Without Jamal Murray, I give them no chance of coming out of the Western Conference. Phoenix is nipping at the heels of the Utah Jazz, and we're about to see just how valuable Donovan Mitchell is to this squad. Bogdanovich, Mike Conley, Jordan Clarkson, these are all guys that now have to increase their workload offensively. I think it's going to get interesting as far as Utah holding on to that number one seed without Donovan Mitchell getting going down the home stretch.
Well, I will say this. You want your guys as healthy as possible. Luckily for the Jazz and Donovan, it wasn't a serious injury. But, man, these guys are playing every other day for basically 3 months straight. It's really tough. These things are going to happen. The recuperation that's needed for the body just isn't there. So it is a blessing that he's going to actually come back. I mean, a lot of other teams are dealing with injuries of some sort. But right now, you just got to hope that if a guy gets hurt, you got to hope it's minor and that he's going to be ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, I hate to say that an injury could be a blessing because an injury is never a blessing. However, when I look at what the Los Angeles Lakers have been able to do without LeBron James and without Anthony Davis, this is a team that has basically played 500 basketball in their absence. I didn't expect that. I thought the Lakers could slip all the way to 7, maybe even 8. That's not the case. They are comfortably sitting at number 5. And I do believe that when LeBron and AD come back, we will look back on those injuries and say, you know what, wasn't the worst thing based on the fact that the Lakers only had a 70-day offseason. It may be the same thing with Donovan Mitchell. The fact of the matter is it's a low-grade ankle sprain. He'll be reevaluated in a week. I don't think that rest is the worst thing as long as he can come back healthy.
Right, and that's the key. As long as he comes back healthy, that's the main thing because right now there's so much going on with these injuries in the league right now. Teams are basically scheduling losses on the back end of a back-to-back or the back end of a three-game or four nights or five-game or seven nights. Like they're resting players, they're calling up guys, they're playing basically guys that are fringe players just because they got to kind of manufacture rest, and that's where we are. So it's a very, very interesting time. Like the gameplay has suffered a bit because of all this, but at the same time, the NBA made a deal. They made a deal with their sponsors and people who pay them money, so that has trickled down to the actual product, unfortunately.
Jameson, let's end with this. As far as the product, you and I have had several conversations throughout the year, the product of the NBA. I love the game of basketball. It's my favorite sport in the world. I love everything about basketball. However, it has been difficult to watch regular season NBA ball. And we knew that was going to be the case going in. I think anyone who understands the situation that the league was in, the TV deals, everything that had to happen this year based off of the delay due to COVID-19 last season, we had to expect this. Still, at times, there have been nights, and I got the league pass, and so I watch basketball every single night. There have been nights where it has been difficult to find an NBA game that was enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, well, I will say this. Every night there's going to be at least a blowout. Like, that's a guarantee. But I will say, you will get a night where you have a competitive game versus two unsuspected teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I get it. Like, I understand, but like some nights there's like several blowouts, but every now and then you'll get two random teams in the, in the hunt. And next thing you know, you have a close game with 5 minutes to go. So it is good in that regard, but a lot of blowouts and a lot of teams that are honestly just trying to wait to the end of the season.
Just looking at the way things are going tonight, Utah and the Lakers, who needs this win tonight more?
No one really. I mean, like you said earlier in the segment, the Lakers have kind of managed this time as well as you could think of. I mean, whenever your two best players go down, you try to hope that they win 30% of the game, like a third of their games. Like, that's like the goal. The Lakers have exceeded that by far, so they're in good shape. If they drop this one, they'll be okay. They got Dallas coming up, but they have Anthony Davis coming back soon, so they're in good shape going forward. The Jazz, they want to get that number one seed, they probably need this one more than the Lakers. So, obviously the Jazz.
I'm with you, because when you look at the way the standings are shaping up, 2 through 7, Phoenix, Clippers, Nuggets, Lakers, Blazers, Mavericks, if you're the one seed at the Utah Jazz, you get to avoid the Suns, the Clippers, possibly the Lakers. You're looking at maybe a second-round matchup of Denver and Portland, possibly getting Memphis in the first round. The one seed for the Jazz is extremely important, more so than any other team, because I don't put a lot of stock in the Phoenix Suns. I could be wrong. They may prove me wrong come playoff time. But just looking at the way the other contenders are shaping up for Utah to get a team like Memphis or maybe even Golden State in the first round, that is monumental for this particular franchise. The one seed is more important to the Jazz than any other team. Let's put it that way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the Suns are the team that probably needs the best matchup, because the Suns are probably going to get a Portland team or a Dallas team. And I think they're better than Dallas, but Portland, the way Portland plays and the guy they have, it wouldn't shock me to see if Portland were to beat Phoenix. It wouldn't shock me. I'm not saying they're going to, but it wouldn't shock me, because we've seen what Dame Lillard can do, and Phoenix has never been there before, so we'll definitely see. But we have a lot of stuff coming up very soon. It'll be very interesting to see.
Yeah, no doubt. Again, our guest right now, Jamison Welsh of BasketballNews.com. Jamison, I know you're a very busy man. I appreciate you taking out the time. Of course, everyone can follow you on Twitter at TheJamison, but also BasketballNews.com.
Man, definitely appreciate it. I'm here every week, ESPN 1100 in Vegas, BasketballNews.com, a lot of different articles, a lot of different podcasts and shows and different staff and NBA people. It's a really, really good site for the NBA junkie and someone that wants to learn more about the league.
Always a pleasure, Jamison. Look forward to a conversation again next week. Take it easy. Be good out there.
Thank you very much, man. Much appreciated.
Don't forget, coming up tonight, the Utah Jazz, the Los Angeles Lakers, 8 p.m. start time of that game. David Locker, Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. Live coverage beginning at 7:50. We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
It's time for the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Let's talk boxing for a moment. Here's an unknown fact. I originally wanted to be a boxing writer. When I was in college, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write about boxing. I love the sweet science. In fact, the first professional sport that I ever covered, the first professional sporting event, was an Evander Holyfield fight at the Thomas and Mack Center when he knocked out Francois Botha. It was the first time I ever got to cover a professional sporting event with a media credential, and I'll tell you, there's nothing like it. Holyfield was way past his prime, but when he came walking out at the Thomas and Mack Center, it was electric. And I think there was only 4,000 or 5,000 people at the event, but every single person was on their feet when he came out. And I was sitting at Media Row. Man, it was fantastic. And since that night, I've had the opportunity to cover several other big events, the last one being Canelo Alvarez and Triple G Part 2. That one was in Vegas. I got to cover that at T-Mobile Arena. It was fantastic. I love the sport of boxing. What I don't love is how boxing has essentially become a parody of itself. And what I mean by that is, over the weekend, we have Jake Paul and Ben Askren. No, I did not buy this fight. No, I did not watch the fight. Because I knew exactly what it would be. A freak show. A circus. And that's what it was. I know several people that dished out the $50 to buy the event, and every one of them told me the same thing. What a joke this is. What a circus. What a sideshow. And I don't blame Jake Paul. I don't blame Ben Askren. I blame the sport of boxing. And the reason I put the blame squarely on the sport is because, obviously, there is money still to be made. I know the talk is the UFC has taken over boxing. Boxing allowed that to happen. When you have a major boxing match, it sells. I'm telling you right now, Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury will sell. Right now, we have two notable boxers to fringe fans, Canelo Alvarez and Manny Pacquiao. These are two surefire Hall of Famers. but they've been widely inactive. And in the sport, the best fights still are not being made. For a million reasons, we haven't seen Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. For whatever reason. For a million reasons, it took us 7 years to see Mayweather-Pacquiao. The list goes on and on and on, and I don't have enough time on the show to sit here and go over my disgust with the sport of boxing. But for anyone who tells me that it is a grandpa sport and it's no longer financially viable, you are wrong. The problem with it, boxing has allowed itself to become a parody. Proof being, Jake Paul, Ben Askren. Makes a lot of money. Triller made a lot of money. But it's a sideshow. Make the best fights, and once again, this sport can go to the forefront. Until that point, we're stuck with the likes of Saturday night's pay-per-view. Out of time with this edition of the show. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. I want to thank Coach Jeff Cincinnatus. Always great to get him on the show. And also Jameson Welsh. We'll start talking NFL draft. That'll be on Drive Time Sports tomorrow. Same time, same place. Be safe. I am out.